Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Monday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. Andy, we've all been allowed to bask in the glow of LA's big win over Golden State for a day. So let's get back to Russell Westbrook. Is he going to come off the bench? Is there anything that can be done to repair the relationship between Westbrook and the Lakers? We'll talk about all of that next.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Want to thank everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday. We get this thing out bright and early for you, no matter how you get your podcasts, where you get your podcasts. And also make sure to make another Locked On podcast your second listen of every day, but only, of course, after making it your first. I want to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by Bet Online. BetOnline has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline, where the game starts. So we'll get to some interesting Frank Vogel news and some interesting things to file away in the Are the Lakers Cheap conversation. More news breaking about that.
that file cabinet keeps getting bigger and bigger and more stuffed with
it's
files
bulbous,
that have been filed
bulbous.
Away.
It's yeah. bulbous.
Yeah.
Swole. It's like mm-hmm. it's like been eating built bars, that filing yeah. cabinet.
Yes, it has.
So we'll get to that. It is worth pointing out that the Lakers, as they start this week, Andy, they do have the hardest schedule in the league, I believe, statistically speaking, in terms of remaining games. But if you're looking for a three-game stretch that could basically make you feel reasonably confident that the Lakers will at least make the play-in, be one of the top 10 teams in the West, Monday versus San Antonio, Wednesday versus Houston, Friday versus Washington. These are three of the most winnable games they're going to play for the rest of the year. If they can win all three, that will actually go a long way to at least making people feel better that they'll be in the play-in. It's not perfect.
Time to be alive, Brian. Time to be alive.
So, yeah, you can't even say for sure that it'll happen. It'll just go a long way to making you feel better about it. One thing people don't feel better about, Andy, professional seg, Russell Westbrook. It was the topic of conversation on the national broadcast going into Saturday's game. It was the topic of conversation during the halftime of the nationally broadcast game. And the only reason it wasn't the topic of conversation afterwards is because LeBron scored 56 points. But it's back to being the topic because there was a lot of news going into the game about Westbrook and his lack of satisfaction with the coaching staff, lack of satisfaction with his role. A lot starting to flow out.
Yeah, there were reports coming out within about 48 hours of each other from both Mark Stein with his, I believe it's called Steinline Substack. You should be subscribing. You know, Mark's been around forever.
Absolutely.
It's awesome. Also, Woj with ESPN, different details like Westbrook, you know, beyond the issues that you are seeing on the court that are causing, you know, problems for the team, he has become very difficult or has really been difficult all season when it comes to taking feedback and criticism and instruction during film sessions. Also,
notes.
That there has
he's not open to notes.
Right. Also, Brian, there has been a push within the Laker organization to play Russell Westbrook off the bench. And it seems like his biggest firewall right now is actually Frank Vogel, who has resisted this. The basic gist being that he doesn't really think it's actually going to make the Lakers better. And as they are still holding out hope, like we talked about before, to at least make the play-in, he thinks it's not the correct basketball move. And look, I believe, if nothing else, that Vogel isn't pushing for this to happen because, as we both said, we don't think he's going to be around next year and they can't fire him twice. So I doubt he is allowing the politics to prevent this from happening. If he wanted to play Westbrook off the bench, he would just play Westbrook off the bench and let the chips fall where they may.
I think this is one of those deals. And look, there's a lot of stuff that is hard exactly to decipher because there have been different, you know, even again, just going back to the coverage during the game, Jalen Rose talking to Stephen A and all these about like the different leaks and rumors and reports. those guys were surmising that, you know, Vogel wanted to put Westbrook on the bench earlier and wasn't allowed to do it. So like, there's a lot going on here. But I think there are a couple of interesting things. One of them is the question of, are you better off playing Westbrook off the bench? And I can understand the argument for it in the sense that it's not a good match with LeBron, that he hasn't played well, that I guess fewer Westbrook minutes just generally are better for the Lakers. I do wonder, though, if Vogel's resistance, if it is in fact Vogel who is resisting, is the idea that if you once you move Westbrook to the bench, and especially if you're really going to play him bench minutes, meaning he doesn't finish games, it's not a way to just artificially stagger the minutes between him and LeBron. He really is a 22-minute-a-night guy that you completely lose him. And a diminished Westbrook for 35 minutes is better than a crappy Westbrook for 17. We kind of had that debate about Rajon Rondo on a different level, you know, a couple of years ago. I do wonder if that's part of it, where he just feels like if we're going to get anywhere, we're going to need Russ to be good. And a diminished Russ or Russ giving us 20 minutes a night doesn't really help in any significant way.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have enough talent on this team to, I think, make up for Russ playing fewer minutes. I mean, I think if AD was still healthy and available, maybe this is something Vogel would be more open towards, because, you know, some of that production, if not a lot of it, would be offset just by having AD there. And a lot of issues that this team have, at least in theory,
right,
could be offset by AD's presence. But he's not available. You don't know when he's going to be. And for all of Russ's problems, he is still in, at minimum, the upper half of talent on this team. And, you know, there are a lot of different ways that you can summarize this as it not helping them from a basketball standpoint. I think one, you know, what you just cited is among them. But the bottom line is, I don't think that they have the talent to reassign, you know, 15, 20 minutes or more of Russ's time on the floor to other guys and have it actually work any better. You'd be lucky if it was a wash.
Yeah. And if you're just going to, if it's just a matter of not starting him, but he's a Lamar Odom-esque sixth man who finishes games and plays 34 minutes a night, 35 minutes a night, like Lamar did, you know, in that run, then you're not gaining a whole lot. You're shuffling the deck chairs a little bit, because ultimately you're just talking about a different way to stagger Westbrook's minutes. Either you stop playing him 30 minutes a night, 35 minutes a night, or you got to figure out how to do it that way. Like I have no dog in this fight. I just don't think it will help that much, unless you just think that the presence of Westbrook in and of itself is so destructive to what they're trying to do, probably, I guess, on both ends, that something else is superior. I agree with you. I don't know what they put in for that extra, you know, 17 minutes a night, or if you just sit him entirely, if you just benched him. As an extra, THT has games already where he plays 36 minutes, an extra that much of Avery Bradley or DJ Augustine, or like, is that going to do anything?
When you mentioned Brian Lamar Odom, the big difference there is when Lamar got moved to the bench, it was because him and Bynum and Powell starting together just didn't make sense. But it wasn't because Odom wasn't playing well. It was like, okay, we need to play him somewhere different in order to maximize all.
Right. It was actually Odom was playing well, which is part of the reason that he resisted it and told Phil Jackson he had lost his rabbit mind. We were standing there when it happened. It remains one of my favorite days of Lakers practice ever.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and
Odom, Google, like, what is a rabbit mind?
Right. And Odom ultimately ended up playing what was more or less starters minutes. Other than Kobe and Powell, he probably played the most minutes on the team. They just staggered those, and, you know, Bynum didn't necessarily close as many games. It was really Lamar and Powell, with Powell at the five, Lamar at the four. But it wasn't because LO was doing anything wrong. This is a different, you know, situation.
But the other thing, though, Brian, that jumped out at me is just, you know, Woj and Stein both reporting that Russ is resistant during film sessions, not receptive to what he's being told, you know, like sounding as argumentative in these sessions as he often is with the press dealing with him afterwards. it reminded me a lot of a point that I've made throughout this season that seems to be still in very full effect with this team and Russ's relationship.
Let's dig into this because I got some questions too about Westbrook's general complaint about his changing role. And I suspect a lot of these things are related. So let's talk about this next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Built Bar. Okay. March, your New Year's resolutions, they are long since tossed out the window, but you can still be eating right. You can still do that one thing to better yourself because Built Bar makes it easy. Like, okay, have you tried the puffs? If you have not, you are missing out on one of Built Bar's best tasting items. They are the first ever protein-infused marshmallow, fluffy, marshmallowy, not just a protein bar. They are a treat covered in 100% real chocolate. They got awesome flavors like cinnamon churro, coconut marshmallow, banana cream pie. They're all going to be your favorites. And, you know, a typical candy bar, for example, they're usually like 200 to 300 calories, maybe even more. Built bars, usually about 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar, 4 net carbs, and 17 grams of protein. The protein, that's the good stuff. Always really cool, interesting, unique taste combination. So go to built.com, use the promo code LOCK15, get 15% off your first order. Again, promo code LOCK15, 15% off at built.com.
Okay, so you mentioned it, Andy. There were a lot of reports, both from Stein and Woj, getting into this as well, about Westbrook's, we'll say, lack of openness to notes, to criticism, to, hey, get your bleep together. And this to me, and then obviously then leading to sort of a rise in tension between him and the coaching staff. This seems to me to say that even if Westbrook would be here with a different coaching staff next year, which seems very likely, it's still not a great fit. Like, it's not, I don't see, like, this makes me feel that something needs to happen this summer to solve this. Like, he's got to be somewhere else next year.
Well, I imagine the front office is going to do their best to make that
happen.
That's
the goal. No, I'm sure. I realize this is not breaking news, but like if it's gotten this bad sort of to at this point, it changing coaches isn't going to work because you're not going to hire the next coach to satisfy Russell Westbrook.
No, I mean, look, it's going to be hard enough to find a coach that makes LeBron and AD happy. You are not going to be concerned about Russell Westbrook's feelings and all this, knowing he is going to be, at longest there one more season and that's it.
What do you mean it's not hard to find a guy to be? Kurt Rambis makes both of those guys 100% happy. LeBron, AD, both on board with Kurt.
Yeah, he's got a great lead assistant in Linda. So, I mean, there you go. This whole thing's set up. Look, I've talked about this a lot over the course of the season, Brian, about how Russ, even when he is technically doing certain things that he's been told to do and he's supposed to be doing, he's never wrapped his arms around any of the adjustments that he's been asked to do. And look, I will acknowledge sometimes he has been taken out of his comfort zone and has been asked to do weird things. There was a point in the win over Golden State where Russ was essentially playing the three because you had a backcourt of Augustine and Avery Bradley, also Melo and LeBron out there. And yeah, stuff like that's got to be kind of odd for Russ. But the bottom line is
so much like go play small forward. It's just we're playing a lineup that's really, really small because we're playing the Golden State Warriors.
Sure, but it's also it affects guys that he guards. It probably affects to some degree what he's being asked to do. But either way, though, guys make adjustments. And Russ, I think, has an issue with all this because he is firmly of the belief that nobody is a better judge of how to use Russell Westbrook than Russell Westbrook. And, it's why I still think that the overwhelming majority, if not all of the criticism he hears, doesn't so much hurt his feelings as irritate him because he thinks that the people lobbying it are a bunch of idiots compared to him. And it got me thinking, Brian, about how Kobe used to praise the hell out of Russ and Rondo. Like, he was a big fan of both of those guys. Like, he was a big fan of their competitiveness, their basic wiring, and he loved that they could both be, frankly, to use his word, assholes. Like, Kobe literally referred to Rondo as an asshole on the record as a term of endearment. And in covering Rondo or talking with others who've been around him, covering him, coached him, that sort of thing, One area where Rondo can be a real asshole is anybody questioning that they ever know something about basketball more than him. Like, it came up with coaches, even coaches that liked him. I remember talking about this with Sue Lieberman, who was on that Kings staff that had a lot of issues with Rondo. She loved him, but she said that was an issue. And that came up with media too. Like, Rondo openly treated basically every question he ever was asked about basketball as idiotic. And I think Russ is a lot like that too. And, you know, Kobe could be a know-it-all as well. Like, he just happened to be able to pretty much back up everything. But, you know, all three of those guys share that trait. And it really starts coming down to how problematic is the trait. And, you know, in the case of somebody like Kobe, again, the good far, far outweighed the bad. But we're in a place right now with Russ where the bad is really outweighing the good with that particular part of his personality.
Well, look, I disagree with you about the extent to which the chatter bothers him on a personal level. But that's neither here nor there. I think part of the problem is Russ isn't like Vince Carter. He's not like Carmelo Anthony. He's not like a lot of other players who have remade their games in as they've gotten older. And I would like to point out that, especially in the case of Melo, he had to literally drop out of the league before he was willing. Sure. Like, these changes generally take time, and they are generally harder for the player, the bigger the star that they
it's
are.
It's not a coincidence that Dwight became finally open to playing a specific role when he had basically fallen out of the league too.
Another great example. So set that aside, the idea that, like, what people, if Russ sure. is being asked to make drastic changes, he's being asked to make them faster than most people would be able to necessarily do. There are certain players who are more capable of those things than he is, because Russ's game, this is part of the reason everybody was a little concerned about trading for him in the first place, is absurdly specific. It is exactly what it is. It is dominant thrust forward and, you know, ball dominance and incredible speed and energy and finishing at the rim and this sort of force that he plays with. There's never been a plan B with Russell Westbrook, like, ever. And to expect him to, quote unquote, make adjustments and reform his game, I would really love to hear from him. I don't think he'd do it, but, like, when you talk about your role changing every game, what does that mean? What do you mean your role changes every game? Some of it I understand, like, in the most literal sense. LeBron is out versus LeBron is in. Like, that has a drastic impact. You know, when AD, LeBron, and Russ are all playing, that's different than when just two of them are playing. But, like, are you talking about setting a screen? Are you talking about being used in, you know, you're setting up a wing on the one spot in the dunker spot? Is that really a different role? I mean, like, I looked it up, things like user ratings, stuff like that. Those are down this year, not still pretty high, but down. And so I think there's a fundamental difference in sort of even what the word means, what the word role change means, the words. And I suspect that a lot of what the coaching staff wants him to do, they wouldn't consider to be a real night-to-night change in his role. And Russ does, because Russ plays and views his game in an incredibly specific way. And as you've pointed out, Andy, believes that, you know, the best way for Russ to be at his best is to let him kind of do all the stuff, or as I've say during the year, to Russ harder. And that's not what the Lakers need. So I don't think he's really capable of making a lot of these changes in the same way that the coaching staff probably envisioned at the beginning of the year.
He may not be capable, but it doesn't help that he's not really willing either. Like, however capable,
well, the unwillingness is part of the incapability. It's
right. I consider those separate things, because that to me is as much a mental and personality resistance as it is, like, he is not capable of doing what is being asked. Like, for example, if part of what, and I pray to whatever God that you worship that this is not the case. If Russ's role was being asked to go spot up in the corner, that is something that he is incapable of flourishing at. He is not a good enough three-point shooter to make that work. So that, for example, would be something he's incapable of. But there are things that he could be doing either off ball. There are things that he could be doing in defensive attentiveness, things that he could be doing that he is, I think, at least more capable of in theory if he weren't resistant to a lot of the, I think, the details, a lot of the focus. To me, they're not exactly the same thing.
I will split the difference and say the stuff on defense, I do agree with you. I just think he's a terrible defender. And at this point, the muscle memory of doing this stuff is just not, he's not good at it. But I think the mental, his wiring makes it really hard. So whether he's capable, to me, it's almost like a distinction without a difference. The other really interesting thing that came out of all the reporting here that gets to both the Westbrook question, Andy, and the are the Lakers cheap question has to do with how they put together the staff for Frank Vogel and who could have been on it. We'll talk about that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Bet Online. All right, basketball, it is in full swing for both pro and college hoops and for all the latest odds, totals, player performance props to where the next fired coach is going to land. BetOnline.net is the number one spot for all your sports betting needs. BetOnline remains the best spot for all your sports scores, podcasts, and news this season. And it's not just basketball. BetOnline.net is your source for hockey, boxing, UFC odds, and information. So head to the website today. Use your mobile device. Learn more about the trends in action. BetOnline, where the games start.
I looked it up. Lamar played 30 minutes a night in the year he went to the bench. First year he went to the bench. So, and it was a drop off from 38 the year before, 39 the year before that, and 40 the year before.
Although some of that, though, I would think had to do with Bynum's availability or lack thereof.
Sure.
And also totally. Pau Gasol not being there.
But Lamar generally finished games, and that was what Phil tried to explain to him. So,
He absolutely did. And look, Lamar ended up winning sixth man of the year. It worked out really well for him.
It did. So again,
the difference is with Lamar. Lamar wasn't getting demoted. Russ would be getting demoted. That's correct. The difference.
Lamar was a starter in, you know, sixth man clothing. The same way that
the like, only Manu reason
Ginobili was
right. The only reason Lamar would be coming off the bench was because of the other people on the roster. It didn't have any. Didn't have Lamar was better than a couple guys starting ahead of him.
Correct.
It just is the way it worked.
So one of the things that apparently Frank Vogel was interested in, certainly the Lakers interviewed him and went through the process, was having Scott Brooks join the Lakers coaching staff this year. And Brooks coached Westbrook before, both in Oklahoma City and in Washington, and has a good relationship with him. And that is reportedly why Frank Vogel wanted him on the staff, despite how it would mean another head coach. Former head coach that could theoretically replace him if things went wrong. The Lakers, as reported, weren't willing to spend the money to have Brooks. They already had David Fizdale in a lead assistant position and were not willing to spend enough to keep to get Scott Brooks as well. Brooks is now in Portland. That's stupid. Can we just I remain mind boggled by the idea that the Lakers would spend this much money on Russell Westbrook and make this kind of investment in Westbrook and not spend on the other things, whether it's an assistant coach, whether it's Alex Caruso, whether it's the guy who makes Russell Westbrook's morning juice, you know, like the greens that he likes, whatever it is. Whatever the ancillary costs to make Russell Westbrook work as a Laker, to not spend that money seems so stupid to me and so short-sighted. And this is another reported example of that.
Well, it reflects something that you and I have both talked about a lot, Brian, with this front office that we think is a big Achilles heel for them, which is it's not so much that it's front office and, you know, obviously dictated by Jeannie Buss. It's not so much that they won't spend at all. because, you know, they are $40 to $50 million in the luxury tax. Like that is spending. They don't have a low payroll, but how they prioritize spending and whether or not they spend smartly, regardless of what they're spending on or how much it costs, is often, to put it kindly, problematic. Like, and it reflects a worldview where I think, you know, they're a star effort organization, and that is no secret to anybody. It is part of their ethos. It is practically a bragging right. But and they're not the only organization in the league that covets stars, just to be clear. But I think it colors the way they view basketball and who's important and who isn't, who needs to be here, who doesn't. And ultimately, I think they consider, unless the coach is like Phil Jackson or Greg Popovich or Pat Riley, like somebody who's considered one of the all-time greats, coaches are essentially interchangeable. And I think they consider players who are not stars interchangeable and replaceable. And it reflects the turnover that they've had the last few years with the roster beyond certain issues like either specific fits or, you know, you and I both felt like they could not just roll back the championship right. team
on that quick of a short break. Sure. And whereas this year has been an unmitigated disaster with a lot of questions, despite the fact that we both thought they'd be much better than they are, we pointed out, we and everyone else pointed out the danger in going into the season in the way that they have, and everything has obviously gone last year. I do think it is harder to evaluate last year as a disaster in itself, because they were good while everybody was healthy, and then the wheels came off. Where I think you can put them, where you can start to be critical, is the way that last year informed this year, the way that using resources last year, you know, pushed into using resources this year, and where they are from when they won the title to where they are now in terms of competence. But I do give them a little bit of a break for last year, for what it's worth.
Yeah. I mean, you know what popped into my head hearing about this? Because both Woj and Dave McMenamin, I believe it was on Woj's podcast. They were talking about this situation, you know, because Dave covers the Lakers for ESPN as close as anybody. And they both agreed that were Jason Kidd still on this staff, had it not been hired by the Mavericks this season, that Vogel would have been fired and Kidd would have been promoted by now. And it reminds me of how, you know, Kidd was always their first choice. And I said this at the time, I wrote a big piece about it for The Athletic when we were writing for them. Like the idea of how they tried to split the difference and sneak in Kidd through the back door as Vogel's assistant, because they were worried about the optics of Kidd because of all of the off the court stuff and the domestic violence incidents in his past and things like that, where basically they were setting up Kidd to be Vogel's replacement, or, you know, at least putting him in line right. for a real possibility of it, but trying to do it in a more palatable way, which meant bringing in a coach they weren't as sold on as Kidd. This was one of the few times where it seemed like they actually had a preference with their coaching. They should have just hired him and just dealt with the optics. And if they believed in Kidd that much, and again, I say this as somebody who would not have hired Kidd in the first place, but if that's the guy you really want, go hire him. Like, as opposed to trying to half-ass this thing and put yourself and also Vogel in a position where you're never fully backed. Nobody wins with that.
I feel like there's a short-sightedness that is starting to really form around the way the franchise operates. Well, you're right. It's not that they're cheap. They're not cheap. Cheap are the Chicago Bulls, you know, over the course of you know, the last 20 years, where, you know, they have a massive market, an incredibly valuable team, and won't spend a nickel into the luxury tax. Like, that's a cheap franchise. The Lakers, though, remind me of a team, you know, or people who buy a $10 million house. And you think you can afford, technically speaking, you can afford a $10 million house. But a $10 million house isn't a $10 million house. It's an $11.5 million house or a $12 million house. Because when you buy a $10 million house, you have to furnish it. You have to put stuff in it. You have to fill every room. You have to make it look like a $10 million house and all that. So if you don't have $12 million, you can't afford a $10 million house. And the Lakers basically are a team that this year, at the very least, bought a $10 million house and decided not to furnish it, or only furnished half the rooms, or whatever it might be. And that to me is really stupid. And
or they just considered like three of the rooms totally unimportant.
Right. Like, just, you don't need to go in there.
Right. So why'd you buy the $10 million house instead of the $7 million? I don't know.
Because I wanted seven extra bathrooms.
Right. Like they just, I question a lot of the thought process behind their spending and what it reflects as opposed to like the overall bill.
Well, I'm sure if they knew they could spend an extra $30 million or $40 million in coaching and luxury taxes and X, Y, and Z, and they'd be the second or third seed in the West versus what they are now, I'm sure they would do that.
Right, but they plan this roster with the idea of being the second or third anyway. But
the idea that you wouldn't do that up front, that you wouldn't spend the extra money to guarantee to give yourself the best opportunity, that to me is what I find absolutely mind-boggling. Like, I get it. Everybody's got a budget, but then don't make a trade for Russell Westbrook.
Right.
If you're not willing to do the other stuff.
Right.
That's like, the part that bugs me.
I'm not treating this like spending other people's money. Like I will fully acknowledge, like we're talking about huge, huge numbers, even for the Lakers. Like, like this is big money even for them.
Yes, it is.
I don't care if they're considered like just a factory of money printing. Like this is still big, but at the same time, assuming they are even reasonably competent in the front office, they had to know that even the most optimistic, you know, prognosis for Russ is this was going to be complicated. So you want to cover your bases as much as possible. Caruso represents an investment in what you're doing. It represents actually a fair amount of CYA.
Yep.
If you're going to go in this direction,
if you can spend an extra $1.5 million or $2 million on Scott Brooks, you know, overpay him by $1 million to what Portland is going to give
him.
To
be a Russ whisperer.
To be a Russ whisperer as opposed to Chauncey Billups' lead assistant in Portland. And I realize titles matter. Invent another freaking title. I don't know. But give the guy, say, we can't give you a title, but we can give you $2 million.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know what? Title matters. Wealthy.
Right. How about we can't take away David Fizdale's job title as the number one assistant. How about we make up a title? You can put whatever you want on your nameplate, but more importantly, we'll give you an extra $1.5 million over whatever Chauncey's going to give you.
Right.
Exactly. And that to me seems like a wise investment if you think it will help you with Westbrook. All right. So, big important stretch of games here. The Lakers can essentially, I think, put San Antonio to bed here with a win on Monday. I'm not saying that means they'll clinch a spot in the play-in. I just mean it won't be San Antonio that catches them if the Lakers beat them on Monday. That would put the Lakers a full 6.5 games, if my math is correct, in front of San Antonio. The Spurs are simply not good enough to make up that amount of ground, the Lakers notwithstanding. And then, you know, Houston and Washington after that. So an opportunity for the Lakers to make some hay this week, build a little bit of momentum. This is an opportunity that will not really be coming for the rest of the season. So they better take advantage of it now. I'm fully confident, Andy, that they will. Thanks for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day. Fully confident. And Locked On Lakers on YouTube. All right. See everybody on Tuesday.